welcome to On Spec, the podcast that does slow journalism, the kind that takes time, telling stories that make you think, feel, and act to do good beyond your own borders. My name is Nafisa Haji, and I'm your guest host for this season, Lethal Dissent, Iran's Hunt for Its Citizens Abroad. In last week's episode, Prologue, we learned about Iranian dissidents fleeing home, pursued by their government all over the world. That's especially true for dissidents taking refuge next door in Turkey. Turkey's proximity to Iran allows the regime to more easily recruit operatives to aid in its efforts to silence detractors abroad. This week on Spec, we meet two friends who shared a love of poetry, both of them idealistic and hopeful for the future of Iran, both actively engaged in reform efforts, both of them ultimately forced to flee their home to Turkey. Join me as we tune into Fariba Nava reporting episode 2 of this series, The Poet.
This is the story of two close friends, both Iranian. One of them is alive and one of them is dead. How he died, it's hard to know exactly. Why he died, also hard to know for sure. What is clear is that in some way or another, it had to do with his life as a dissident, both inside and outside of Iran. That's the friend who's still alive, Mehdi Hajeti. He and his wife scoop me up from an airport arrival curb. They're living in a seaside town in Turkey. They're here hiding. Zohra Rastigari, Mehdi's wife, is with their daughter in the kitchen. She just got home from school. Zohra's offering options for a snack. She's made her pick. Things seem normal, but beneath their daily family life, there's an almost constant hum of stress. Mehdi and I find a spot to talk. We sit in the living room. He counts down in Farsi as I do a sound check. Before Mehdi agreed to meet me, he called a contact at the U.S. Embassy to make sure I'm not a spy for Iran. He was afraid I might be after him and posing as a journalist. Extra cautious is how he has to live as a marked man. One look at his messages inbox on Instagram shows what it's like. There are so many threats, and because I don't follow them, they go into the spam inbox. I don't open them for security reasons, and also, I don't want to be under attack. Turkish intelligence warned Mehdi that the threats against him were so serious they can't guarantee his safety. That's how vulnerable he and his family are. He's been shadowed by Iran ever since he fled. And now his friend, Mohammad Shahbani, was dead. Mehdi's story, how he became a marked man, is intertwined with Mohammad Shahbani's story. It explains who Mohammad was and how the two friends became government officials for a regime in Iran that later threatened to kill them. Mehdi is short and skinny. He has dark hair and light brown eyes. He looks physically delicate, especially for someone who has both taken on the regime and suffered its brutality. But he has power. Mehdi has more than 100,000 Twitter followers. He was a leading voice of opposition in Iran. Even outside Iran, sitting on his couch here, he promotes the hashtag hijab, no hijab, in support of women taking off their headscarves. It's a movement that's gone viral in Iran and is instigated by online posts. Remember, Ayatollah Khomeini was a dissident in exile once, and he managed to overthrow the government in Iran in 1979. So no matter how delicate Mehdi might look in the psyche of the Iranian regime, he could pose a serious threat. Mehdi says he never planned to be this guy. I came into politics by voting, he says. The first time he voted was in 1997, which was a big year in Iran. Mehdi was 18, still in high school and hopeful that Iran would become a more democratic nation with individual rights like the right to free speech. He campaigned for parliamentary candidates who promised reform, including the presidential candidate Mohamed Khatami, and Khatami won. It was unexpected and led to change in Iran. For the first time since the Islamic Revolution, people could vote for village and city councils. During the height of reform in the early 2000s, political debate became freer, and even the moral police started looking the other way. But that's about as far as things got. Because the ones with the real power in Iran, the supreme leader and the elite clerics, they were mostly hardliners, anti-reform. And they could and did use their power to disqualify any candidate or stop any new law they did not like. Things weren't changing like Mehdi hoped. They were getting worse.
این یعنی که ما تمام اون 20 اندی سال تلاش بیهوده کردیم.
He's saying, we tried for more than 20 years to reform a government, and we see the finality of this government, that it's killing women because of headscarves. Our efforts of 20 years were for nothing. It was a deception, a lie. It was depressing, but there was a time when Mehdi still had hope.
من در واقع شروع آشناییم با جمع این بچه‌هایی که آقای شعبانی هم
When he was studying math at university, he joined a poetry group. They met weekly at cafes, hotels, and each other's homes to recite poems, critique, and engage in literary debate. I'm asking him, when did you meet Mohamed Shahbani? And he says, through this poetry group. We found each other as friends and very quickly became close.
به دلیل علاقه‌ای که به هم داشتیم خیلی زود صمیمی شدیم.
They sat down next to each other and Mehdi asked Mohamed to explain modern Persian poetry. And he did. In Iran, poetry groups are commonplace because Iranians have been writing poetry for centuries. It's in how they talk, how they think. Modern Persian poetry is experimental and could use free verse, escaping traditional constraints. Mohammed himself was a poet. His poems were well known in literary circles. Like this one. The lights dance to welcome death, a pair of open arms and eyes open to the world's illusions. What is fire but existence is sorrow in the presence of non-existence. When the cleft pomegranates sprinkle sparrows' beaks with blood.
نه اینقدر یادم مهربون بود یعنی حتی اگر میخواست هم
Mehdi says Mohammed was such a kind person. Even if he wanted to, he couldn't raise his voice. But the government was wary of artists like Mohammed.
آزادی بود که با باورهای جمهوری اسلامی که حتی در
He says here, the Islamic Republic even interferes with what you wear. I ask what he means by that.
سرش رو با تیغ می‌تراشید، عینکای گرد.
Mohammed would shave his head and put on open-minded round glasses because he was naturally open-minded. His outfits were t-shirts and jeans.
شش تیشرت و شلوار جین پوشیدن.
His cigarette was always at the corner of his lips. Like a French intellectual, I ask.
آره، و این خود جمهوری اسلامی بر نمی‌تابید.
Yes. And the Republic didn't tolerate this. Mehdi says Mohammed couldn't get a government job. After college, Mehdi and Mohammed remained friends. They grew closer. Then in 2017, Mehdi decided he would run for Shiraz City Council. Mohammed wanted to help him.
Mohammed
helped me a lot with my ads to get elected, he says. We spent day and night in the election building. Mehdi won, and despite Mohammed's open-minded intellectual look, he got a job for the government too. Mehdi hired him. He worked in public relations for Shiraz. He'd sit with Mehdi in his office, Mehdi at his desk, Mohammed at the open window smoking a cigarette. His lighter sat in an ashtray on the sill.
بنرهای تبلیغاتی زیادی رو در سطح شهر شیراز کار کرد.
He worked on many banners hung on Shiraz billboards. One was about harassment of children and how city residents should stand up to child abuse, Mehdi tells me. Child abuse was a taboo subject, and when it happened, families kept it a secret. Mohammed wanted parents to talk to their children about it.
از این بنرها نزدیک به 30 تا بنر زد
There were 30 billboards advocating this, and they were all over town, Mehdi says. In a few days, the Iranian Revolutionary Guard Corps took them down. Why would the IRGC do that? They said you're going against our morals. Mehdi says that according to the Iranian Revolutionary Guard Corps, abuse, especially sexual abuse, shouldn't be talked about in public. That's when the regime started to see Mohammed as an enemy. Things got worse quickly, and not just for Mohammed. Around the time the IRGC was busy tearing down the billboards about child abuse, Mehdi was in court. He was there to help some friends. They were Baha'is, a religious minority who have their own prophet. Baha'is are forbidden from practicing their religion in Iran and are considered heretics. They're often persecuted. The government every year arrests Baha'is, and often without reason. I know these boys. They had gathered as a group to worship. The judge said they are spies. Iran often accuses Baha'is of spying for Israel. And in Iran, spies are sometimes executed. Mehdi went to the courthouse to protest the judge's decision. I got into an argument with the judge, and he got upset and said that this is none of your business. You're not Baha'i. I said I'm their representative. But the judge refused to change his mind. And then he threatened Mehdi. He said, I'll come for you too. Mehdi knew it was dangerous to speak out, but he did it anyway. Some people I've talked with have called him a loose cannon. So much of his activism was against the regime. Mehdi says he knew sooner or later the regime would come after him. He says he coped with his fear by staying busy, by helping the Baha'is, by working as a government official. He wasn't a random citizen protesting in the streets anymore. His job gave him power. It also raised the stakes on his dissent. But Mehdi and Mohammed were now in the line of sight of the Iranian Revolutionary Guard Corps. That's a dangerous place to be. And then came the billboard. It was the week commemorating the Iran-Iraq war veterans, Mehdi tells me. Hundreds of thousands of people died in the Iran-Iraq war in the 1980s. Chemical weapons were used on child soldiers. The veterans' holiday is called Holy Defense Week. Mohammed was working with two of the city's graphic designers, Mehdi says. Mohammed asked them to do some posters for that commemoration, and they did. Both Mohammed and the mayor of Shiraz signed off on them. They were printed and then plastered on billboards. Here's what the poster looked like. The designers chose a stock image to place beside a commemorative poem. It's also possible they were given the image, though we don't know by whom. The image had three soldiers standing on top of a ridge overlooking a plume of clouds with their backs to the camera. They were holding their guns. The posters were displayed in the center of town. But there was something off about the posters, a detail they missed, something a Revolutionary Guard commander didn't miss. The soldiers were holding M16 assault rifles. But Iran doesn't own M16 assault rifles. Who did own those guns? Israel. They were Israeli soldiers. Once the commander saw the poster glorifying Iran's sworn enemy, Mohammed and Mehdi were in trouble. And it was after that Mehdi was in court being threatened by the judge. That night, Mehdi tweeted to his more than 100,000 followers that he hadn't been able to free the Baha'is. Early the next morning, he headed to work. outside his office, he found plainclothes men from the Iranian Revolutionary Guard Corps protesting.
دیگه از فردا صبحش که شروع کردن این بسیجی ها و سپاهی ها اومدن جلوی اول شهرداری.
Mehdi's saying, the next morning, the IRGC soldiers came and chanted in front of the municipality that the city council has become a place for Israelis, Baha'is, and the enemies of the state.
شهر شده لونه جاسوس ها، اسرائیلی ها و بهایی ها و از این حرف ها.
Mehdi's staff was worried. They told him the Iranian Revolutionary Guard Corps was going to come in from outside and beat him up. I said, this is my work and I'm staying here. I could feel since morning that I'd be detained today. Co-workers came and said you should leave because the rest of us are going to get in trouble because of you. So he slipped into an elevator. He took it down to the building parking lot, got in his car and drove home unnoticed. At home, Mehdi tried to stay calm. He sat with his family. They ate. His son, Bamdad, had music class at 4:30 p.m. They decided they would all go. So Mehdi, his wife Zora, Bamdad, and his daughter Mahur hopped in the car together. I was on my phone chatting with a friend. In the middle of the boulevard, Zora said, they've surrounded us. A handful of cars had cornered them. They were unmarked, and the guys in the cars were wearing plain clothes. They jumped out and made their way towards Mehdi, Zora, and the kids, with guns drawn. They opened my door and pointed a weapon at me. My kids saw the weapons and began to cry. They violently forced me out of the car, took my phone, and handcuffed me. Then they shoved my head down and pushed me into the car. Zora had been driving, but one of the men took the wheel and drove her and the kids back to their house. Mehdi was driven there too. For 2 hours, the IRGC rifled through his house and everything in it. Computers, phones, documents. Then they blindfolded Mehdi and drove him to a secret interrogation unit and dumped him in solitary confinement. He had tried to prepare for this, thinking ahead about his phone's messaging apps like Telegram.
حالا اونجا شروع کردن حالا با یکم دلی مشت لگدی که پسورد ایمیلم و پسوردهای.
They started punching and kicking me to get my passwords for Telegram. I had deleted most things and I gave them the passwords.
پسوردها رو بگیر. بنر رو هم همزمان با توییت من.
Mehdi says the interrogators showed him a snapshot of his last tweet about the Baha'is next to one of the posters commemorating the Iran-Iraq war and then accused him of being a spy for Israel.
در نتیجه اینها همشون یه شبکه جاسوسی هستند و این رو پروموت کرد.
The other person accused of being a spy was of course Mehdi's friend and co-worker Mohammad Shabani.
به طرز به شدت خشونتباری توی کوچه محمد شعبانی رو بازداشت کرده بودن جوری که خوابیده بودن.
He says they took Mohammad in a much more violent way, slamming his face on the pavement in the street. They kicked him. He told me the first 3 days the interrogators tortured him to say, confess that Mehdi Hajati works for Israel. Say this and we won't bother you.
که حاجتی با اسرائیل رابطه داره و این عکس سرباز اسرائیلی رو حاجتی به تو داده. اگه اینو بگی ما کاری باهات نداریم.
چی شکنجه میدادن؟
What kind of torture, I ask.
ما خیلی محمد توضیح نداد یعنی که چیکارا باهاش کردن. یعنی تقریبا ما هیچ کدوم از بچه‌هایی که میشناسیم راجع به اتفاقاتی که برامون افتاده بیرون حرف نزدیم.
None of us who were detained talk about the types of torture they put us through. He says they don't talk about the torture because it's too traumatizing. Despite the torture, Mohammad refused to give them a false confession or falsely implicate Mehdi. Mehdi says he believes he and Mohammad were framed, though there's no clear-cut proof. He and Mohammad had their suspicions. But whoever it was cut out a woman from the original image of the Israeli soldiers and left only the three men. In Iran, there are no women soldiers. So the presence of the woman in the picture would have been a giveaway that the image was not legit to begin with. Mehdi spent 11 days in prison. Then he was released on bail. Mohammed was first taken to the same secret interrogation unit as Mehdi and then locked in jail for a month. Years later, while in exile in Turkey, Mohammed was interviewed by BBC Farsi.
هر دو پرونده رو قرار بود به هم ربط بدن یه جوری و هر جور شده از دل این پرونده هایی که ساختن یه پرونده در بیارن. نوع پرونده سازی بود. من فکر میکنم خیلی قبل.
He's sitting outdoors at a cafe. His head is shaved. He has a goatee. He wears a black t-shirt and round black frame glasses. Here's what he said.
و توی بازی ایشون هم در مورد من سوال شده بود.
During my interrogation, I was asked a lot of questions about my relationship with Mehdi Hajati. And in his interrogation, he was also asked about me. Both of us were taken to the same detention center. Our solitary confinements were right next to each other, and both of us essentially had common interrogators. Sometimes I could hear Mehdi's voice responding, and at times it uplifted my spirit with his laughter during his interrogations. After they were released, Mehdi and Mohammed met up one more time in Shiraz. I asked Mehdi, when you two spoke, can you describe what it was like? Weren't you afraid that you were being listened to or watched?
یعنی اصلا ما دیگه از لحظه‌ای که آزاد شدیم جفتمون انقدر زیر فشار امنیتی بودیم که آسایش و آرامش نداشتیم. اصلا ما تو خونه اگر یه بحثی رو
Why, yes, since the moment we were freed, the both of us were under so much security threat that we didn't have any peace. We no longer spoke in loud voices. Even me and my wife didn't speak loudly. In our home, we would go to the terrace, we would leave our phones in the house, and on the terrace, speak in whispers. Within the year, Mehdi was charged for spreading propaganda against the regime. As police raided his apartment once again, his daughter Mahur peeked out from behind her bedroom door. She was 5 years old. She watched as the police handcuffed her father. Mehdi was convicted and sentenced to a year in prison. It would be the first of several imprisonments and battles with the courts. I ask him, while you were in prison, what was it like for you, for someone who never experienced that?
خیلی زیاده. یعنی به ویژه با بقیه زندانی‌ها خیلی خیلی شرایط ترسناکی داشتن.
It was a scary experience. Mehdi says he spent 6 days in a cell with prisoners sentenced to be hanged. He says it was very dirty. There were 40 to 50 people in a small room. They would sit there without clothes in the summer and winter without blankets. Mehdi met drug addicts, convicted murderers, monarchists from the Shah's era, and a lot of innocent people. He told me about prisoners who were put in leather collars and asphyxiated almost to the point of death, then released. Only for their interrogators to strap them in leather collars again. The way they tortured Mehdi was different.
نگرانی مثلا از تعرضای جنسی و اینها بود که اون 5-6 روز تقریبا من از این ترس نخوابیدم. یعنی یه جوری بود که یه تختای دو طبقه بود.
I didn't sleep for 5 or 6 nights there because of all the sexual assault at the prison. I would attach myself to one of the walls. And was in a state of oblivion between being asleep and awake. As soon as I heard the men turn, I'd jump out of my skin. Mehdi says he was not sexually assaulted, but the experience haunts him still. He says, I'm still suffering from that trauma. As Mehdi and I talk, Mehdi's wife Zora has been sitting there nearby. She's looking at her husband, her eyes wide. I turn to her and ask, Have you heard these details? No. I didn't want her to know these things. Zora also keeps things from Mehdi. She says night is never peaceful for her.
ولی خب میگم کوچکترین صدایی از تو اتاق بچه‌ها بیاد این استرابه واقعا من که با
She says we leave the door to our bedroom open and the smallest noise coming from the kids' rooms I have this panic and quickly jump up. One night I thought there was someone walking in our home. I checked the entire house to make sure no one was there. This is the fear I live with, but I chose this. Zora is also an activist, and she has stood by her husband. She says she chose the path of activism knowing the sacrifices she'd have to make for the greater good, that is, bringing freedom to Iran. I asked Zora, how do you help each other lessen the fear?
همین که گفته نشه خب خودش به نظرم میاد باعث میشه که
We don't talk about it. Talking about it makes it more real. Not saying anything is better. I feel like sharing these feelings may spread it to Mehdi. I know he's afraid too, but if I share my fears, he might become more anxious. That's why Mehdi doesn't talk about it much either. In this way, it's sometimes hard for them to know how the other is struggling.
Mehdi was arrested 3 more times. When he learned that the regime was bringing more charges against him, his friends told him, if you go to prison again, you won't ever get out. He saw only one course of action left.
گوشی و همه چیم رو روشن گذاشتم تو خونه.
I left my phone at home and hid in a car with a blanket. A driver drove through our parking lot, and in this car, we went to another apartment building. Then I changed to another car and hid there. If anyone had followed the first car, we were safe with this second car. Then I took a phone with someone else's SIM card, and until I arrived in Turkey, I didn't contact Zora. When I crossed the border, I sent a message on Signal.
به خاطری که رد تماس رو نتونن بزن فقط عبور که کردم پیام دادم تو سیگنال که من عبور کردم
Zora and the kids made their move to join him later. They went to the airport and were able to get on a plane to Turkey where they met up with Mehdi. They began their life in exile, isolated and scared. Back in Iran, Mahsa Amini's death in government custody sent Iranians to the streets in protest. Mehdi felt hopeful again. He might return to a new Iran. Instead, he got shocking news. Mohammed was dead.
I'm Nafisa Haji. Lethal Dissent is reported by Friba Nava, reporting in Turkey by Beril Eski. The series is produced by Chris Harlan Dunaway. Our editor is Ibi Caputo. Additional research by Umar Farouk. Fact-checking by Beril Eski and John Klepetowski. Özge Sebsici is our photographer and multimedia producer. Artwork for the podcast is by Hatiye Garib. Musical score and sound design by Uzer Ahmed. Legal review by Eric Brass. This story wouldn't be possible without support from the Pulitzer Center and Radio Zamane. Thank you to our partners, The Verge and PRX. Special thanks to Executive Producer for The World, Dan Lothian, and Managing Editor for The World, Tinku Ray, our friend ER, Shahnam Gulshani, Adnan Devrim, Hamish Brown, Kate Ellis, Stephen Smith, Levi Bridges, Banu Azizian, Adisha Azizian, Yithan Ujer, Rishad and Alan at Splice Media, and to the Iranians who helped us, whose full names we can't use for security reasons. Thank you, HM, AM, and MB. Two friends, both working for reform in Iran, fall afoul of their government. They go to prison, they're tortured, but then they escape. Happily ever after, right? Except, like others we just heard about, their ordeal isn't over, and one of them ends up dead. I'm Nafisa Haji. Tune in next week to hear more about Mohammad Shabani, the dead poet, from one of his friends and from his family. What was his life like in exile? Was it hard for him, as a poet whose currency is words, to live in a place where language itself was foreign? We'll hear from Fareeba Banawa and her outstanding team as they investigate further in Lethal Dissent, Iran's Hunt for Its Citizens Abroad, Episode 3, Losing Touch. Please write with any questions you might have at onspecpodcast@gmail.com. Keep listening, and don't forget, we need you as a Patreon subscriber. Go to onspecpodcast.com and become a member to help support our next season. Also, please follow us and let us know what you think on Twitter at onspecstories, on Instagram at onspecpodcast, and on Facebook at onspecpodcast. If you have the time, please do rate or review On Spec on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to your podcasts.